Hi there, and welcome to the Crowdfunding Academy. My name is George, and I help independent creators launch their products and games. On this podcast, those creators share their journey from an idea to an actual product and everything in between. Today's guests are Andrew and Jeff. They are the founders of Road to Infamy Games. They raised over $3 million across 11 crowdfunding campaigns, including the immensely popular Canvas series, and they just closed Fromage. Welcome, Andrew and Jeff.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. I love that you're so in sync as co-founders that you even speak at the same time. That's amazing. You guys have an interesting history that we're going to dive into, which starts all the way in 2015. You also just closed your latest campaign, Fromage, which raised almost $300,000. But let's start at the early beginnings. We go back to the year 2015, about 11 crowdfunding campaigns ago. You launched your first project called Road to Infamy. What prompted you in 2015 to even start doing crowdfunding?
I think the idea for crowdfunding came from my cousin, Alex Chin, who he does the Seasons Playing Card series. And he was my first introduction to Kickstarter. He was just making artistic decks of playing cards and selling them and crushing it. And I was like, you mean it's just you? Like, you don't have to get some publisher or something to do this? You can just go online and sell your game? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, we could do that. I don't know. Why not? And Andrew and I had been designing games to entertain our friends for a while. So that's sort of where that idea came from, to turn our little like hobby of just making games for fun and turning it into a reproducible experience for other people to purchase without needing a big publisher to say yes to our ideas.
And what a great journey it has been, because you launched Road to Infamy, you raised $18,000, which is very good for your first campaign, but then you raise another $18,000 for Cosmocracy, your next game. Then you have a game called Bow Ties, which doesn't hit its funding goal and is canceled. Then from there on, you launch Crypt, which raises more than $220,000, which is an insane jump. Then you have another campaign after Nova, almost $50,000. And then something insane happens. You launch Canvas and it raises over $700,000. And stop the madness, there's more. You do it again with another Canvas game, which raises almost $800,000. And then this feels like an infomercial. There is more. You do it a third time and you raise another $700,000, which is just insane. So talk us through what happened with Canvas and when did you know that you caught lightning in a bottle?
Yeah. So what happened with Canvas? Canvas was a really great idea. Jeff and I had played a game called Mystic Veil that uses transparent cards. And I think we both thought that game specifically just underutilized it. And then months later, Jeff said, I think we should do an art game with transparent cards. The cards should layer on top of each other and the artwork between the layers should transform what people see. And it was a really great idea. And from there, we really just spent a lot of time developing and figuring out how you can get a good looking piece of art by mixing and matching any three layers of transparencies. When we realized, I think we had a crazy success before that one, as you talked about our other campaigns. So I think the entire time, it wasn't a guarantee in our minds that this was going to be a huge success. The thing that set off that we had something really special was when we got the final artwork together, Jeff put together this gift that just showed a rotation of cards in a sleeve, showing people that they could make endless creations of artwork with this game. It was just like on a 10-second loop. We put that all over Facebook board game groups, and kind of the response was like immediate and very crazy. Tons of likes, tons of comments, and tons of people who wanted to know when the Kickstarter was coming out. So that was our first of like, oh, this is something very special and very different from any project we had worked on previously.
I think a big difference between Canvas and our previous projects is for Canvas, we really focused on creating something that like gave a really unique game experience. And as passionately as I love all our design projects, like our previous games you mentioned, like Afternova is a negotiation game, Crypt is a bidding game, Road to Infamy is like another bidding game, Cosmocracy is a like social game, and then Bowties, the failed one, is a party game. Like all those things, those game experiences exist. Yes, our game is different and I love those games, but Canvas was the first one where it's like when you're playing it, you're like, I haven't played a game where I get to make art before. That's totally different. So I think that was probably the biggest reason why that one finally caught the attention of the Kickstarter crowd.
And where did those backers come from? Because even though you had done previous campaigns, you didn't have nearly enough backers to be it all, have it all be repeat backers. So was it just the Facebook groups that you guys run ads? Like, where did all those people come from?
Really organic. Yeah, mostly the Facebook groups.
The Facebook
groups. Kickstarter browsers, like people looking through the projects was a big part of it. We have been building our mailing list for a while, and we had a good number of people following from, like, the Crypt campaign was very successful in number of backers. It was not a very profitable campaign because it was like a small $9 game, but that did, you know, put us on the map a little bit as far as building a bit of a following, and that may have contributed to some of the initial traction as well.
So no paid marketing, no ads?
No.
Is that something to this day that you still don't do, or today with Fromage, you do rely a little bit more on ads?
We do now rely on ads a bit more, like the environment changed. Whereas before, there was just so many more people and so many more communities on Facebook, and they were so easy to reach. And now we see that there's the Facebook groups, especially for the board gaming hobby, have died off or have just migrated over to places like Discord that really do a better job of kind of cultivating game and putting together gaming sessions. So because of that, it's a little bit harder to reach our audience in a completely free way. We have to push market a bit more.
Yes, because you've been crowdfunding for almost a decade now, which is crazy. Aside from not being able to fully rely on organic reach anymore, what other changes have you seen in that past decade?
I would say that back in 2015, when we came out with a game, the competition, the level of polish you needed on your games was so much lower. People were more willing to accept what looked like a work in progress or a little bit more amateur of a look. Nowadays, for a brand new company, board game company, to go on to Kickstarter, they need to look and present themselves in the same way that a veteran publisher does, with very high quality illustration, graphic design, have their pricing down, have incredible components, and also have that like very veteran marketing push of reaching as many different avenues and websites for advertising, as well as having the people in the industry behind the game as well, like your reviewers and your tastemakers.
Yeah. Well, good thing that you had 10 years to practice and grow up with the medium. Jeff, what was the moment where this turned from a hobby to this being a full-time business for you guys?
I think the big turning point for me was getting laid off from my full-time job. I was doing a pre-production directing animation for TV commercials, and ended up getting laid off right after I had bought a condo in the city, Chicago. And I was like, if ever there was a time for this board game thing to work, it's now. So that was really tough. It was almost out of necessity, but it also gave me the time to focus all of my efforts on making the Kickstarter campaigns as professional looking as possible.
And where, sort of how many years in were you at this point?
I'm trying to remember. Was that before or after the Crypt campaign, Andrew? Do you remember?
It was before. So 20.
Yeah. Was it before or after Bowties? I think it was before Bowties.
Yeah.
So yeah. So I got laid off, and then the Bowties campaign happened, which was our one failed one. So it was like, okay, maybe this isn't going to work out, but stuck with it. The very next one was Crypt. And then that was our first one that kind of put us on the map a little bit with the 200,000 funding, I think 11,000 backers for that one. So yeah, going from failed to 11,000 backers, like we figured something out in between there. One of the big things was I'm trying to focus more on a product that Kickstarter people would be interested in. We learned that party games were not, or at least they're harder to capture a wide Kickstarter audience with. So we tried to make a high quality game in a small box with an undeniable price point, that $9 price point. And I think that helped.
There's nothing like the risk of having your home foreclosed as a driver to to push you towards great success. I'm glad it worked out for you. That's great. It's great to see you still sitting with the roof over your head. So Andrew, maybe you can speak a little bit to the business side of this. Obviously, you've had 11 campaigns over roughly 9 years. So that's almost like a little over a campaign a year. But to have a successful business, you need to probably do some sales outside of your crowdfunding campaigns as well. So what does your rhythm look like, or what does your business look like outside of Kickstarter?
So right now we do direct sales on our website. We have a Shopify website set up. We also have that link to Amazon where we get the majority of our direct sales after Kickstarter. And we've also begun like a partnership with a major distributor, Asmodee, in Europe and in North America. The Europe division helps us license and translate the games for Asia and Europe. And the US kind of opens us up to a lot of retail stores. And as a two-person business, we really rely on that to do the cold call and the sales and kind of manage that piece of the business.
And what, if you don't want to share this, you don't have to, but what percentage of your business's revenue comes from the Kickstarters, and what percentage comes from all the things you just mentioned?
The Kickstarters, it just depends on the year and what's been published in that year. I would say this year, I would think that about half our revenue is coming from, I'd say a third comes this year, it's a third came from Kickstarter, a third came from direct sales, and a third came from distribution, roughly.
Yeah.
So it's pretty even. But when you have a major Kickstarter, that's a big time when we get a ton of revenue.
What is different about managing a huge Kickstarter like Canvas compared to a smaller one? And then when you had that for the first time, what did you run into?
With a bigger Kickstarter campaign comes a lot more backers, a lot more opinions and comments and customer service, a lot more replacement parts you have to send out on the back end of it. A lot of people with conflicting ideas of what they want to see as stretch goals, or if they disagree with some choice of component that you had or some upgrade that you made, and you know they liked it better how it used to be. Those voices louder when there's more people, because there's more people feeding off those sorts of comments. And yeah, like it's exponential, I think, with bigger campaigns. There's that much more work to do on the customer service side.
So to quote a famous rapper, more money, more problems is definitely true when it comes to crowdfunding campaigns.
And it's not all problems either. Like it's some of it's really, really fun and engaging. With some of the Canvas campaigns, we let people come up with what they wanted to see on the individual art cards. And then our illustrator, Luan, would draw those things, and we're voting on their favorite ideas. They're coming up with titles for it. With the smaller campaigns we've run, that wouldn't have even really been an option, because you'd only get like a handful of people engaging with it, and it just wouldn't feel worth it, or it's really a community thing. But it was like when the community comes together and helps make the game better, it just makes the whole experience feel like just so much more gratifying. And it's like, yeah, this is why we do it this way. This is why we use Kickstarter for the community and all their great ideas to help make this the best game it can be.
Amazing. Let's dive into your latest project, Fromage. Andrew, why make a game around cheese?
Yeah, it was an interesting process. What happened was we are good friends with the designers, Ben Rossett and Matthew O'Malley. And one day they reached out to us and they said, we have some free time. We love our friendship. And we're like, what if we could also, you know, make something together, design a game for you? And we sent them a list of kind of ideas we had that we either hadn't fleshed out or were a little bit failed, or we just didn't know where to go with them. They read through it and they found a game that we had been working on about whiskey. And they said, this is really interesting. You developed it pretty far, but we just want to do a different theme. We want to do the theme of cheese. You're talking about aging whiskey. You can also age cheese. And we just said yes to that. Like, why not? And they went off and they started designing. And it was our first foray into working with designers and producing something that we hadn't done ourselves in-house. So kind of just like an opportunity to do a really fun project with friends.
One thing I found very disappointing is when I looked at your community tab on Kickstarter, I saw backers from France were not more than many of your other campaigns. Have French people not taken a particular liking to your game?
I think the main issue was we've always just done Kickstarter for English versions of our game. And this game with a French title, more than anything, we got a ton of feedback that the French people are like, you have to do a French version if you're doing a French cheese game. And we let them know that we'll get there eventually, and we got to find the right partners. I think for them, once they saw the success, they knew that they could just wait and get a French version in a year or two. So I think they decided to go that route.
Yeah, that's a good point. Backers have gotten so much more savvy when it comes to those things. Like, they know when something's a success, it'll come out in different languages and in the local market. That makes total sense. What has been the best piece of feedback that you have received about the game so far?
It's a good question. There's been so much good feedback. So something we did special to this game that we haven't tried before was, first off, it's the most complicated mechanically game we've ever made. And so I thought it was really important that we were going to need more play testing and more feedback than we had ever needed before. And so I decided to create a Discord channel. And this kind of lends into what we talked about earlier, where it's like Facebook is going away. There's more communities on Discord. And I thought that it's time for us to have our own community on Discord and get more interaction with our fans and with people who love our products. So we opened that up. And we've just gotten so much amazing feedback and response about the game. People being able to play it for the first time and telling us how much they love it. Other people going through, say, our rule book with a fine tooth comb and trying to help us out and pick out any tiny little discrepancies. So when the final version comes out, you know, it's going to be airtight and everyone's going to understand every single word that's in there. So it's hard to pinpoint for me just one piece of valuable information, because so many people have helped and given us their input, and we've taken all of it into account as we finish the game and send it to the printer.
And you mentioned this is, from a physical perspective, a more complicated game. The board itself, it has many pieces, it has actual moving parts. So how do you go about that for a crowdfunding campaign? Do you fully sort of flesh this out with a manufacturer until you have prototypes that are almost retail ready, so you know exactly how it's going to work and how much it's going to cost? Or is there still some sort of surprise down the line when you need to actually go into manufacturing?
A little bit of both, but we definitely get everything quoted out by the manufacturers ahead of time, send them the files, and we've received a pre-production copy made by the manufacturer we intend to use before the Kickstarter has even launched. So we have a really nice looking prototype for our videos, for backers to see, hey, this thing does exist. It's not just a crazy dream these guys have. They've thought this through. It works. But I mean, it's still, even now as I'm doing all the file preparation, I'm going through changes, changing shapes of cut lines, trying to make things fit together just a little bit better for a better user experience. There's always a lot of work to be done after the campaign, even though going into we thought, hey, this looks great. I think we're really close to, you know, this being a final product, but we do things like have stretch goals that changes some specifications of some of the components, right? We upgraded some of the workers. So we had to do some new 3D modeling for the way those little plastic worker pieces look. Yeah, there's still a lot to do, but I think we're close.
Yes. So you feel confident that sort of the main big complicated things that you have it down, your manufacturer has it down, you know how to do that, but then there's small variations, print work, stretch goals that are still up in the air a little bit.
That's right. Yeah. It was most important that the central board was figured out ahead of time, right? It's a tri-layer board with cutouts for all your little cheese pieces. It's tri-layer because you can actually insert these cardstock mats in between the layers of the board to change the positioning of the different cheeses on the board. So it's a very complex piece. Oh, on top of that, it's also totally modular. You can piece it together in a variety of ways. And then there's a tile that lays in the center of it that can be oriented or flipped in any way. So there's a lot of logistical potential problems with that. So we had to make sure that that fully functioned ahead of time.
Is that also something that you feel more comfortable taking on now that you've done multiple campaigns, you've been in business for 10 years, to take on slightly more complex projects, or would you have done this for your first project as well?
No, it's been a huge learning process since the beginning. I remember our very first game, Road to Infamy, was like all default shaped components. We didn't do anything fancy because our prototype was printed by the game crafter, who does like a print on demand service. And you have to print things at their very specific component measurements. You can't just get anything custom cut the way you want to. And so we had everything just in these very default templates. And we weren't doing anything fancy back then. But as the years have gone by, we've certainly got more and more adventurous about designing pieces and making them very unique to each of our board game experiences.
Yeah. So the lesson here is, do not start by making things cheese shaped when it's your first project. Keep it standard shaped and then move on to cheese shapes after about 10 years. Okay. I think that'd be a great lesson. Andrew, do you have any other lessons for people who are just starting out now, things that you know now that you wish you knew back then?
Ooh, I will say that like we do get quite a bit of people new to Kickstarter or wanting to launch their own things on Kickstarter. And I can say the most helpful advice that we end up giving that's really important for every new creator is that the marketing and the push for your product, for your board game, whatever it is, it needs to start 6 to 9 months before your Kickstarter ever launches. You need to be getting your product in front of people. You need to be building that excitement, building your email marketing list. Once people see your product, board game, they play it, ask them if they would like to join your mailing list and hear the latest news about when it will release. Like build that audience as soon as you can, because for, I think, too many people thinking about Kickstarter, they say, as soon as it launches on Kickstarter, a whole bunch of strangers will find my product, they'll get it, they'll understand it, and they'll purchase right then there. And maybe that was true in 2013, but it is not true today. You really have to, step one is you need to jumpstart your own project by bringing a lot of your own audience in there. And once it hits, you know, it reaches a certain level of success, then it'll kind of continue to roll as new people, new eyes see the project. But you really have to be thinking about the marketing well before you do the Kickstarter.
Yeah. Basically, what you're saying is, in addition to building a great game, you also have to build a great marketing plan. And that is at least 50% of a campaign.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. That is solid advice. Can people reach out to you with ideas that they might have for games?
Yeah, definitely. We're always open to chatting game design. Andrew and I are beyond obsessed with game design, and we were always happy to look at other people's games. We're certainly open to even publishing the right game if ever we come across it, but even if it's just to chat about ideas, you know, we're more than happy.
Awesome.
We read every email and we respond to every email as well.
Wow, you guys are so generous to your fans. That's incredible. So that is a great tip. If you're listening and you're new to crowdfunding, you have two guys with a ton of experience who read and reply to every email. So definitely go check them out. The link to their website is linked in the show notes. So you can find them or go to r2igames.com. Andrew and Jeff, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us and with the rest of the crowd. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else you want to promote, shout out, make sure people see?
If you missed the Fromage campaign, pretty soon and probably within the next month or so, we'll have the pledge manager open for that. So if you join our mailing list, you can get a notification as soon as that's live. If you want to join in on our latest crowdfunding adventure.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Make sure to check it out. The links will be in the show notes. And thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, George.